Welcome to the Countdown Podcast. We are going to review two movies for you today. One is Operation Mincemeat, and the other one is, what is it, Paul?
Firestarter.
Alrighty, my name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul, then. So let's get straight into it. We'll do Wayne's film first. Operation Mincemeat is a 2022 British war drama directed by John Madden. Screenplay by Michelle Ashford, based on, I think, a novel by the same name by Ben McIntyre. Mm-hmm. It stars Colin Firth, Matthew McFadden, Kelly MacDonald, Penelope Wilton, Johnny Flynn, and Jason Isaacs. It is 128 minutes long. It came to cinemas here in Australia, where Wayne saw it in advance screening, with thanks to
Natalie Cameron.
And the box office so far around the world is only $7.8 million. No word on the budget for this one. It was released to Netflix, though, in the Americas. So a little bit different.
Oh, was it?
In their case.
Yes. Ah, okay. Well, everyone, the reason that we're doing these two reviews today is because I saw this film that I wanted to watch. I said, hey, Paul, you want to see Operation Mincemeat? And he's like, no. And then he's like, but do you want to see Firestarter? I'm like, no. So we said, why don't we just do them both here. So I've seen this one. Paul hasn't. And Paul has only seen his. I haven't seen his. So here we go. Operation Mincemeat.
Well, let me just interrupt to say,
please.
You're just going to give a very quick non-spoiler section or non-spoilers, and then we're going to do the spoiler thing, and then Wayne's going to spoil the shit out of the film. I don't care. And then we do the same thing when we talk about Firestarter.
Okay? There you are. Okay. So Operation Mincemeat is a true story set in like 1943, World War II, as the Allies are determined to launch this all-out assault on the French, you know, I mean, the Fortress Europe kind of thing. But they have this problem. See, they want to invade Sicily to turn the war because that's the best spot for them. But the Germans have that city all sewn up with troops and shit. So the Allies have to somehow make Hitler think they're invading Greece to make him divert all of his firepower there, and then they can easily take the Sicily island. But and the way they did this was freaky, because what actually, this is the real thing that they actually did in real life. They said, let's find a dead soldier's body and plant it with misleading military documents, drop it in the ocean and hope it washes up on the shore and gets to the right people, and then that will fool the Nazis into thinking that the Allied point of attack is Greece, not Sicily. And that was it. And everyone's like, that's the stupidest fucking thing I've ever thought of, yada yada yada. And in the end, that idea went all the way to Winston Churchill, and he said, yeah, that's ridiculous. When can you start? Because that was just all they had. And this is that movie where they actually did that. Colin Firth is in it. He's the head of the Operation Mincemeat, and he's got a sort of three or four other people with him. But what was really interesting about it, and this is the reason that got me, is that Ian Fleming, the writer of James Bond, was in fact involved in this operation in real life in World War II. And I'm like, what? James Bond dude was there? What's up? And they do play that, because one of the people is Ian Fleming there. And you see him, he actually played a very minor role. But he's always, you can see him walking into their Q branch. Yes, they have a Q branch in the Naval Intelligence. And he's like, what's this watch do? It's also a buzzsaw. And he looks at it and he smiles. And that's they cut from there, you know? And then that kind of thing. And you see him sort of writing his little novel and stuff like that. So that's kind of cool. Yeah. That's kind of cool. But the actual film itself is, I think if you're a history buff, like the fellow I brought with me, John, shout out to you. He knows everything about war. He actually liked the movie Midway when you and I hated it.
That doesn't make shit. You a war film lover. Nobody does bad taste in films.
Nobody knows everything about this shit, so I was actually asking him questions. So he loved it, and it helped me love it, to be fair. But I will say objectively that it's a little bit like, here's your eat your vegetables, they're good for you kind of movie, because it's like the history and that kind of thing. It is made interesting a bit by putting a bit of romance in there and a bit of slight love triangle-y kind of thing, just to mix it along. But I got to tell you, I would say overall, it is fairly run-of-the-mill. And you do know what happened, so it's hard to spoil. Basically, they did actually manage to convince the Nazis that they were doing it. And so they successfully took Sicily. But overall, I would say the film is fine. It's fine. It's not. It's a little bit like an MOW to me. Like, it's a little bit of a movie of the week kind of thing. It's okay. I can see why this it's a perfect Netflix film. It's not much a theatrical release. So
well,
there you go.
The critics, well, sort of a bit more favorable than you seem to be, Wayne. 93% of 40 critics' reviews on Rotten Tomatoes gave a positive, with the average rating of 6.8 out of 10. And on Metacritic, it has a weighted score of 63 out of 100 based on 11 critics.
I'm kind of surprised about that. It is, like I said, it is good. It's just, not outstanding.
Like you say, each vegetable is there good for you. This sounds like it's a reasonably well-made, competently put together, well-acted kind of drama, which is just, Yeah,
yeah. Well, because that's what I love about the film is I like a good wartime spy story, not a war movie, but a war spy movie. I'm fine with that because you know how I feel, and plus, you know, Ian Fleming. What are you gonna do?
128 minutes though to basically go, we should put a body with fake intelligence on it and put it in the ocean so it will wash up in the right place and the Nazis will find it. Like, I just summarized it in two sentences. So
yeah. Well, but we may as well just go into the spoiler bit now. There's no really spoilers.
Into spoilers. I mean, you already spoiled the ending by what happened in real life.
Exactly. So. What was cool was that when they dropped the guy in there, they had to deal with all of the stuff of, oh, this guy's got no next of kin. All of a sudden, his sister turns up and they got to try and convince her to let her just excuse her about it. Then it's like, oh, you know, it washed on shore, but it didn't get to the right people. So they had to use their spies in, you know, Germany to try and make sure it goes to the Greek public. You know, all this sort of stuff. It goes like that. So
they're manipulating it as it goes along.
Yeah, and it could easily fall apart at any moment, and they're the only chance that the British or the Allies have. So it's like, if this doesn't happen, we're going to go ahead with our attack on Sicily, and Hitler's team will already be there. It will massacre like a third of our fucking army, all the nations.
Right.
So it's like, if we fuck this up, everyone dies. So it's a bit cool like that. And yes, like I said, it's enough fun. Especially, like I said, if you like this kind of thing, take your dad to this. He'll love this shit.
Yeah, dad film. Fair enough.
You know what I'm saying?
I see that it's got Penelope Wilton, so that's Sean's mum from Shaun of the Dead, isn't it?
I was trying to pick her up. I was like, who is she? I was looking at her going, who is that girl? So, okay. Really?
Yeah, and Kelly MacDonald from Trainspotting.
That's the one I was looking at. She's from Trainspotting. There, I look at her face. I was like, why does she look like a dirty little schoolgirl? Ah, that's right. Trainspotting.
Not where I thought that was going to go. But I'm glad that we got there in the end, given that this was all being way too straight-laced for the Countdown movie and TV reviews review.
That's right.
All right. Anything else we should know about it? Anything else that you want to that's notable or worthy or?
Colin Firth is his shit right here, playing this stiff upper lippy sort of Brit.
Yep.
Person, and he's also still terribly fancy because he's a, you know, major or whatever. I don't know. He's just very, very cool. I think that's the strength of this film is him, as you might expect.
He's the best part. Okay. And what is Matthew McFadyen, or ex of Spooks, the TV show Spooks?
Yeah, I didn't recognize him, but he's actually the 2IC. Like, the coolest thing about this was, I was asking John this, was like, wow, why are their uniforms different if they're both from Blighty? Like, Colin Firth has a Navy sort of like outfit, and the other guy has like a sky blue kind of outfit. And he's like, Air Force and Navy. I'm like, oh, cool. So one guy is from the Air Force, one is the Navy, and I'm like, oh, look at the style. It's really cool.
Fair enough. All like right, so what would you give then, Wayne, in this little mini review, basically, in the end? Operation Mincemeat is a score, and is it a recommend?
It's a recommend. Oh, shit. It's a recommend if you like war movies. If you're a, say, 35-year-old female who's like, I need something cool to watch, no. Not you. Not for you. Not for you.
Or younger, I assume.
Or whatever, you know, just that age. Like, if you're you and me, I would also say, no, I would never say to you, Paul, go see this movie, right? You won't have a bad time with it, all right? But I just wouldn't recommend it to you, because then you say, well, Wayne said this shit was good, and then he's putting foot in my ass, you know what I mean? Like that. So I recommend
it. Would I do that?
Oh, many times. I would give this a 64. 64 out of 100.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, right around. A little bit lower than what the formal critics have it as, but fair enough. All right. Well, that's Operation Mincemeat 3-1, which I did not pay, or I paid to see. Boy, did I pay to see it. But there's a little bit of a story it goes with. So Firestarter is a remake. Is it a remake or is this a readaptation after that whole controversy that we waded into with the recent top 10? Anyway, it's the second version of a Stephen King early novel, which he wrote back in the 70s. This one is directed by Keith Thomas, who directed a film last year or the year before called The Vigil. A screenplay by Scott Teams, who was one of the co-writers on Halloween Kills. And it's produced by Jason Blum and Akiva Goldsman, the stars. Yeah, Zac Efron, Ryan Kiera Armstrong, Sidney Lemon, Kurtwood Smith, Michael Greyeyes, and Gloria Rubin. The music is worth noting because it's by John Carpenter, his son, Cody Carpenter, and Daniel Davies. The score is very good in this movie. It's 94 minutes long, this film. Its budget was $12 million, and it's been released straight to the Peacock streaming service in America.
Uh-oh.
We don't have that streaming service here, so it came out at the cinemas. And my brother and I were looking for something to go and see. And I said, how about Firestarter? Wayne wants to do Operation Mincemeat. Let's go see that. And we went to a cinema that's closer to him here in this part of Southlands, which was all the rage about 20 years ago.
I know. I remember the place.
We went there. We were the only two people in the entire cinema. We had a private screening of this film, Firestarter, which should have helped a lot. The first seats we sat down, I'm like, why'd you pick seats so far at the fucking back? So we moved forward because we had the whole cinema to ourselves because it was one of these long, thin cinemas with a relatively small cinema screen, I've got to say.
Yeah.
So we sat down in other chairs. First one, these, you know, retrofitted kind of legs that go up at the Hoyt cinemas.
Okay.
First one I did, that one just broke. So as I was trying to raise it up. Okay, well, that seat's broken. Excellent. There were two other out-of-order seats.
Southlands, I'm 20 years ago.
This place is broke asses. Anyway, so that was our experience of going to watch the film. The film itself, massive piece of shit.
Oh, really? Because, Paul, let me tell you something, right? I know nothing of Firestarter. All I know is the video VHS cover that was with the little girl on the front and then the fire behind her. Is that Drew Barrymore? Yep.
The original one back in the 80s was Drew Barrymore.
Okay, so that's all I know. I don't know why there's fire around. I don't know her name. I don't know why she's blonde or chilled. Why, I don't know. What's the story of Firestarter?
So basically, this one, having said all that, then I'll give you the box office, well, not the box office, but the critical reception. 13% of 79 critics' reviews are positive, with an average rating of 3.8 out of 10, according to Rotten Tomatoes. Metacritic, with a weighted average of 32 out of 100, based on 24 critics and cinema score audiences who came out of the cinema, reported C- as their average rating on an A+ to F scale. Ouch. So this one is copying it left, right, and center, and it basically follows a young girl named Charlie who's grown up with parents who both have telekinetic powers, and she has inherited those powers, and her power is to start fires with the power of her mind. So Zac Efron's character, Andy, he can push people with his mind to get them to do what he wants. So you kind of take control of people. And the mum is a bit more of a traditional telekinetic in that she can just move shit around with the power of her mind.
So is Zac Efron the dad?
Yep.
That's the hottest dad ever. All right, yeah.
Well, yeah. And Charlie is, I guess she's 9 or 10 in the film. And it basically picks up where her powers have begun to come back. The film starts off all right. There's a pretty great opening credit sequence which gives the backstory and shows both mum and dad were part of experimental drug.
Oh.
Back when they were in college, because they were desperate for money and whatever, and then this is what developed their telekinetic powers. And the film implies then, because we skip forward basically 9-10 years, that they went on the run, got away, and they're being pursued, and they've had to live underneath the grid, because the government's looking out for them, because they know that they're these powerful telekinetics, and they want to study them more and find out why it worked for them.
I see.
And not necessarily for everyone else. That setup is all pretty good. And they've had this child together, and the child has been starting fires, heavily implied, right from when they were a baby. But I'll come back to that in a moment.
Okay.
So, in this film, Charlie has a bully at school, and when he bullies her one time too many, she loses control of her emotions. And when she does, that's when fire erupts from and around her.
Does he burst into flames?
No, which is a real fucking shame.
What the fuck? Burn that piece of shit.
Yeah, the little shit bully deserved to be burnt, but that's just one of many threads which never gets addressed in the film. I guess.
Crap.
The film's straight away. This film looks like ass. You know, it's a Blumhouse film, so you expect a certain level of low budget, but normally he at least employs a director that can hide the seams on this film. But this looks like, you said movie of the week for Operation Mincemeat. It's not even that good. This looks like a Lifetime Channel production.
Oh my God.
Where I'm like, look how boring this is. It's never more than any sort of 1-2 shot back and forth and just then maybe a wider shot of the room of this conversation taking place. There's nothing at all visually arresting or interesting about this movie. It is flat. The colors are flat. It's shot terribly.
Wow.
It's just awfully produced. Say nothing of how shit this screenplay is. This is based on a Stephen King novel. It's not one of his better novels in my humble opinion.
Does it change from the novel?
It does change the novel, and I'll come to that in spoilers.
Okay.
The original one with Drew Barrymore and David Keith as her father was a bit more true to the source material than this one, which takes some real liberties. The script by Scott Teams is fucking garbage.
Mm-hmm.
This film sets things up and never follows through on them. Mm-hmm. This film just jumps from point A to point F and expects you just to go along for that particular ride. It is beyond stupid. And the ending, which seems to be, let's just rewrite the ending for the sake of rewriting the ending, is offensively shit. Scott Teams, stop writing fucking scripts. You are a hack of the highest order, is basically what I have to say to him. And he's working on some kind of Lego sequel or requel to The Exorcist at the moment, also to be directed by David Gordon Green after he finishes this Halloween trilogy. Fuck, he's garbage. I don't understand how he keeps getting a gig. Anyway.
Funny? Wow, performances. So you hit it.
Yeah, I really did. Performances, Zac Efron's okay as, you know, the way too hot a dad. Everybody else is really poor, especially the villain of the piece, Gloria Rubin, who plays Captain Hollister in the film. She is awful. She stinks up every scene. She's meant to be menacing. She just comes across as weirdly lame.
Really?
Like when she's trying to threaten someone, you're like laughing. Like, okay, yeah, cool. Yeah, whatever.
God, that's horrendous. That's the director's fault there.
This is meant to be a horror.
Yeah.
There are like two scenes of people being burnt where you see the aftermath thereof. That's the only thing even remotely horrific about this movie other than the way it's made and produced and put together. There's nothing. It's not scary. It's not tense. You don't give a fuck about any of them. I mean, no one wants to see a kid get hurt unless they're a redhead bully. But but you don't give a shit about the kid, really even about the kid. I could barely give two shits when things such I'll get to in a moment in the spoiler section take place. It's just garbage from woe to go, other than the opening credits and the score.
So clearly not a recommend.
Oh God, no. Steer well clear. I know this is, if you've got Peacock, it's basically free for you. You might put it on, but there's just nothing redeemable about this film. Maybe get the soundtrack and plonk that on and just enjoy that, but otherwise do not bother. Or shut it off after the opening credits and tell yourself, well done, you've saved yourself about 85 minutes of your life.
Wow. All right. Bag of ass, you say.
Yep. I'm going to hit the spoiler button. Here we go.
You can't handle the truth.
And the truth is, no one attached to this film should be allowed to make, including Jason Blum. Jason Blum, stop making shit-ass horror films that pollute the market and completely and utterly piss off horror film fans. Stick to your kind of Minaris and all that kind of shit. No, I didn't know if he produced that one, but you know the more interesting kind of indie fare. That's where clearly you need to
Blum
be.
Blum is Blumhouse, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Jason Blum.
All you got to do is stop watching him, Paul.
Yeah. This one looks like it's not, I mean, again, they sold it to Peacock, so they knew they had a stinker on their hands. That's the only way that this kind of plays out. So the Michael Grey Eyes plays this Native American hunter who has some element of telekinetic powers himself.
That's the dad.
In The Shining, no, he's a villain who's hired to hunt them down. In the book and the original film, he dies in the climactic big showdown at this sort of, I can't remember what they call it, but the shady government facility where all this is taking place.
Okay.
She kills him and whatever else. And the dad dies. And so Zac Efron dies in this movie. He begs her to burn him so that it will also burn the crappy Captain Hollister I said earlier, who's not, what's his name? Michael Grey Eyes' character is John Rainbird in this particular film. So it's not Rainbird, but it's the woman controlling him, if you want to put it that way.
Okay.
In this film, once he fails to kill Charlie and she gets away, or capture Charlie, but only captures the dad, they lock him up in another room. And then, for whatever strange reason, he decides he's against the organization now. Fair enough, they locked him up. But he decides he's going to become her surrogate father. And the film ends when she decides not to kill him, even though he kills her mother at the start of the film. And this whole film has been about her anger.
That's this film here.
Yeah, just blowing everybody up.
Huh.
So this film ends with one of the villains carrying away the daughter who's killed her dad.
Why would that happen? This is stupid.
It's very stupid.
That's already annoying. Film, it's like actually shit.
And the book, she kills everybody. And she goes back to a farm, which they spend a good portion of the middle part of the book and their film in, where they made friends with this kindly farmer and his disabled wife. That happens in this movie. But in this film, literally the farmer gets shot in the leg during this confrontation and staggers out of shot. And we never see him again.
Yeah, that's right. That sounds about right. I don't know what the economics of these types of films are, because it always intrigues me. Because same with like those mockbusters and shit like that. They cost like fucking whatever, you know, 200 grand, and then you go fucking do something and it's shit. And who watches it though? Someone must buy it so they can profit. I don't get
I have to assume if it was a $12 million budget, Peacock paid X amount, because it's a new film, you know, that attracts more people to buy it. So they do their economics and will this make us, if not directly, but indirectly over time, $10 million worth of...
Yeah. You know what I mean? But this stuff has been going on before streaming and stuff. You know, it's like, it's interesting to me that there's a market at all.
Well, this was $12 million budget. I mean, it's a small budget.
No, but it's $12 million bucks.
But it's not
Someone had to sign it off.
Indie, tiny production. Yeah. And it looked like, I said, it looks like us. It's terrible. Keith Thomas needs to go back and learn his craft a lot better. This is the final product that he's putting out.
Fair enough. Okay.
So absolutely do not recommend. This was garbage. My brother thought it was garbage as well. Firestarter is one of the big failures of this year. It will no doubt feature in my worst 10 films of the year at that particular point in time. I'm scoring this one as a 26.
All right. Nice burn, so to speak.
Ah, no pun intended. Yeah.
All right.
I had to refer to it as both a misfire and a dumpster fire in my written review.
Oh, I can only imagine you did, yeah.
That's it. Sorry. Well, we got one okay film and one terrible film. That's all we've got for you this week, which is a little bit sad. But
sorry about that, folks.
I actually read this the other day. COVID, this is the year that really COVID's really impacting on the film industry. There's a lot less big budget studio films coming out, which is why we're scratching our heads in May going, shit, there's not much out now until like Jurassic Park and Lightyear. Oh, obviously Top Gun, but after Top Gun there's like a gap of a couple of weeks, and then this happening?
Yeah, those ones are all from pre-pandemic as well, so what happened is everyone got burned like 2 years ago, and so they stopped shit 2 years ago, and now you're still, you know, it's like everything before then has just been backfill. So
yeah, once we get through this, I'm not sure what's going to happen after that, but yeah, there might be a lot more war and Seagals coming your way in future months, so we got that to fall back on. But yeah, all right, well, sad as it is, that's really it from us today. You can check out all our details via email at Countdown, or ask us any question via email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com. Check out the website, thecountdownpodcast.com, which Wayne has been dutifully working on. No, he's not. He's been sick, so he hasn't been able to work on anything. So we're going to give him a gap this week.
Got the Rona, everyone.
Yeah, Wayne has been battling off very, very hard. We're in different spots at the moment because he's still in ISO.
Mm-hmm.
So, how are you feeling, my man?
Getting there, man. It's not as bad as I thought, but then again... I don't want to jinx it.
Yes. So hopefully all coming good in short order and things will be back to normal next week. But and then otherwise, you can follow us on Podbean where we host the show, and check out the Facebook This Community links in the show notes for discussions about films and TV and lots of other things as well, with a great bunch of people. And that's it from us today. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been the soundboard that I'm adding in post.
You are a sad, strange little man, and you have my pity.
Hooray! Wayne loved it. It was the best ever ad you could ever possibly imagine. We will catch you next time. See ya!